This is our day to shine. If I'm going to do it, it will have to be right here on this day, right here in this place. And so Paul writes to the church at Philippi. This is chapter 4, verse 4. A single statement that we will dwell on today, and then I will invite myself to live in. And maybe you too, if you want to. And there's people who are around you, and they would love for you to live in these words. Rejoice in the Lord, always. I will say it again. Rejoice. Now, why do you think Paul says, I will say it again? Why does he waste precious ink repeating himself? Well, you can think about that. Why does he add that little word always to it? That's part of what I want to address today. Jerry Hawthorne, who was a teacher and mentor for so many of us when I was back in college, he taught New Testament Greek and was an inspiration and a challenger and an encourager, somebody who dealt with lots of anxiety in his own voice, in his own life. You know, often had trembling hands and a fluttering voice, deeply moved by these thoughts. He was a very careful thinker. If you were down, he would come alongside you and comfort you with great empathy. If you got a little puffed up, he'd poke you and always be pushing us. You can do more. When he came out with his wonderful commentary on the book of Philippians, it was so good that he was asked to do a second book that would look at some key word themes in Philippians. And he did. And my favorite, the climax of this little book, the final chapter in it, is what he calls the note of joy. All I want to do today is go through some of these words and then think about it. And think about how do we pursue joy, because you can't pursue joy by trying to pursue joy. And one of the interesting things about Jerry is, although he brought lots of joy to us, he could not tell a joke. And it will turn out that the reason he couldn't tell a joke is closely connected to how it is we pursue joy. Jerry Hawthorne. Of all the themes that can be detected in Philippians, joy is the most obvious. It has great theological significance, for here, as in the Old Testament, like Nehemiah 8:10, where it says, the joy of the Lord is our strength. Joy ultimately is rooted in an unshakable faith in God and springs from a deep conviction that God acts to save his people. And that's why we're invited to rejoice in the Lord. Then Jerry goes on to talk about how 2,000 years ago, there were three word groups, and they're all found in the New Testament that describe joy. One of them is the kind that would be used to describe a roar of joy at a game. Ever been to a game and they do the wave? Our team wins and people throw their hands up in the air. That's one word group. Another word group, euphrino, that little word euphemism, often used for like joy at a party when somebody's life is going well, something like that. But then Jerry goes on. The third word group, Cairo, Kara, if you've ever heard like a little baby whose name is Kara, though originally secular music, becomes the word group for joy in the New Testament, used a total of 140 times. And it's very interesting. In the writers of the New Testament, followers of Jesus, they took a word, agape, the verb agapao, that was not used much at all and kind of commandeered it to talk about a special kind of love. Self-giving, self-uniting love. And in the same way, it's like they had a experience of joy, an understanding of joy that was so shaped by Jesus that they latched onto a word that wasn't used much. It was mostly a secular word, and that became the word that in particular Paul would use. Paul, Jerry writes, never uses words for joy from the first word group, rarely from the second. But the third group, that would be accented at Jesus' resurrection and ascension, that would persist to the present, even when Christians are suffering, when you find yourselves immersed in temptation and trouble, count it all joy, James says. That's the word group he uses. And Jerry writes, the third group, this special word group, is Paul's special word group. He alone of the New Testament writers accounts for more than 50 uses of such words pertaining to joy. This kind of joy is a distinctive recurring theme in Paul's letters. In spite of the fact that so much of his own life was marked by pain, disappointments, and afflictions of various kind, the gospel he preaches is the gospel of joy. So rejoice in the Lord because we have the gospel of joy. But, Jerry writes, that is not primarily dependent on health, wealth, comfort, or general well-being, but on God. And this leads to a kind of paradox, Jerry said, that makes his idea of joy not terribly easy to grasp. On the one hand, joy appears for Paul as something within the person that is not at all able to be affected by external happenings. So, if we're going to draw our hearts in this way, and I'm not an artist, but I'll try this one, we might just look like this. This is a happy face. Have you ever been to a therapist and they show you different faces with different kinds of emotion? Paul was in prison, but this unhappy state of affairs did not diminish his joy. People, fellow Christians, very likely treated him with hostility. We saw this, tried to hurt him, were set on making his life more miserable, yet this did not affect his joy. Even the possibility of his life coming to a violent end could not keep him from being doubly joyful. Together in the same sentence, chapter 2, verse 17, I rejoice and I will rejoice. To quote Karl Barth, joy for Paul was a defiant nevertheless, which he set full stop against any resentment. So, that's true. But, on the other hand, joy also seems to be something that can be affected by external happenings. For instance, he says at Philippi, there'll be his joy if they continue to stand firm. The implication being, if they were disloyal to Christ, if they were to fall away, it would rob him of his joy. Furthermore, Epaphroditus might remember, Paul writes about when he was severely ill, and if he would have died, if God had not had mercy on Paul, then he would have had sorrow, the very opposite of joy. So, for Paul, life is not always like this. Life is sometimes like that. Here's the paradox. Joy is something unaffected, yet also affected by external events. How are we to understand this? And I will tell you one more face that's not an option. So, for Paul, some moments are like this, but there are moments that are like this. As you might know, folks who study this sort of thing, human emotion, will talk about two different kinds of smiles. And this particular smile is called a Duchenne smile after a neurologist back in the 19th century. And this smile, which doesn't look as natural, which does not look as spontaneous, is sometimes called a Botox smile or a Pan Am smile. Pan Am is an airline that no longer exists. And it turns out that God has made our faces so that when we force a smile, when we try to smile, we can make the corners of our mouth move up. However, this is just so cool. There are particular muscles in the eye, make little crow's feet around the eye, that essentially can only be activated when we spontaneously experience delight. And so the idea now is that for Paul, there are moments in his life when something happens and he will experience this. He doesn't fake it. There's not this syrupy, saccharine, plastic, superficial, I never want to have a negative feeling, so I'll just go around like this. No, he knows deep sorrow, and yet he says, always rejoice. So how are we to understand this? Jerry writes, the resolution of this and an understanding of what is intended by joy comes from observing what else Paul wrote about this subject. After careful observation, one begins to suspect when he talked of joy, he was in reality describing a settled state of mind characterized by what can best be described as peace, an attitude that viewed the world with all its ups and downs with equanimity. A confident way of looking at life that is rooted in faith, a keen awareness of and trust in the living Lord of the church. Over and over, Paul reminds himself and the Philippians and all Christians, for that matter, to rejoice in the Lord. Hence, for Paul, joy is more than a mood or an emotion. It is rather, Jerry wrote, an understanding of existence that encompasses both elation and depression. It is a worldview that is able to accept with creative submission all events that come along, both delight and dismay. It is a perception of reality that generates hope and endurance in affliction and temptation, ease and prosperity, because joy allows one to see beyond any particular event, good or bad, to the sovereign Lord who stands above all events and ultimately has control over them. Jerry was a great bringer of joy. I mentioned before when I was talking about it, although we loved having Jerry around, he's probably the worst joke teller that I ever knew. And I didn't know this until just recently, I didn't know why, I was listening to a talk from Dallas Willard, and Dallas talks about how we all learn to hide our souls. We use our bodies, our faces, and our eyes, and our tone of voice, body language, to hide from other people the darkness, or the selfishness, or the greed, or whatever it is that's going on. And Dallas said, little children don't know how to do this. They haven't yet learned how to hide their soul. And that's part of why they can't tell a joke. They just get too happy too quick. They cannot keep the cat in the bag. In fact, the cat never even goes in the bag. And this is part of the deal with Jerry Hawthorne. It's like he was terrible at telling a joke because he didn't know how to hide his soul. He would turn beet red and start laughing way too soon. So today, the invitation is to go through life, and whether circumstances right now are difficult or circumstances right now produce lots of delight, to see with a settled rootedness beyond all of that, there is one who overcomes life and death, and we're together with him. And so instead of seeking to rejoice, I seek to bring joy. It is only possible to rejoice in the Lord when we have the mind of Christ that Paul talks about with Philippi, that seeks to serve others above myself. Don't hide your soul. Shine.
Hey, thanks for joining us here at Become New. My name's Tim. I'm part of the team. Whether you're taking this teaching in on YouTube, on podcast, or at our website, we hope that these daily teachings serve as a recalibration for your heart and mind to the things of God, to the kingdom of God, to the teachings of Jesus, and that you can find something from this teaching to put into practice each and every day as you're learning how to follow Jesus, as we're all learning. For me, the things I want to put into practice today from the teaching, one is I want to look for opportunities unbidden to serve people around me, looking for a little opportunity to just go out of my way to serve somebody. John talked about going after joy, but indirectly, which I thought was just a great insight. So I'm going to look for opportunities to serve. And I'm also going to look for opportunities to be courageously vulnerable appropriately. But I just think it's so good, the idea of refusing to hide our souls, to think about just opening up all the doors of our heart and letting the light shine in, opening the doors of our heart to God, but then also to one other person, one trusted, fully disclosing friend is what John refers to them as. And so I want to look for opportunities to be courageously vulnerable today, even about the things I'm not necessarily proud of. What is it for you? What is God speaking to you? What are you going to put into practice today from what you have learned? You can put it in the comments or let us know. All of our contact info is in the show notes. Thanks for tuning in. See you next time.